It's time for Roast Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We're the only show on the airwaves dedicated to growing roses. We're glad you've joined us today. Our phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you during today's show. The number to call is 347-677-1870. Or send us a tweet using the Rose Chat hashtag on Twitter. Join us as we explore the world of roses.
Well, hello and welcome to our very first primetime broadcast of Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. And we've got a great show lined up tonight. Teresa, I'm so excited about tonight's guest.
I am too, Chris. We've got a mother-daughter team who's traveling the U.S. in a quest to visit every national park in the next 4 years. And they've been looking for roses along the way, too. Lisa Smith and her mom, Nancy Reed, of Big Blend Radio, right here on Blog Talk Radio, are with us tonight to talk about this big adventure, their popular show, magazines, and anything else we can squeeze out of them. Good evening, girls, and welcome to Rose Chat.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for having us on the show.
Oh, we're so excited. You're such adventurers. Nancy, how in the world did you get involved in radio and magazine publishing?
I started a magazine when we lived in South Africa because I was tired of people saying there was nothing to do. And I found a million things to do, so I thought, well, okay, let me start a magazine and show you what there's to do in your own country. And it just progressed from there.
Neat. Well, you have a list of shows that goes on and on in magazines. It's very diverse, and it's so interesting. I think there's really something for everyone. You seem to have about every subject covered. So let's talk about a few of your online magazines, bring our people up to date. Of course, our personal favorite is Garden Gossip. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about Garden Gossip?
Sure. This is Lisa, and we have 10 different magazines. And what happened was we actually started out as a variety magazine, and we kind of had too much content on one website, and so we divided it into 10. And Garden Gossip, yeah, that's our home and garden magazine, and we, you know, include our radio interviews in the magazine and also video and articles and games and puzzles. And, you know, the 10, we have everything from Way Back When is our history magazine. We have Vacation Station, which is travel, quality of life, which is family, relationships, fashion, all kinds of things. So, you know, I think we have a lot of interests, so we cover them, and it's interesting because it seems that, you know, a lot of people enjoy the different things. You know, we want everyone to connect with the different topics.
Well, and you say these different magazines with a topic, but the magazines are chock full with all kinds of things. I mean, you've thought of so many things to talk about. The current Garden Gossip online magazine has information. It's everything from green interiors to summer heat. So there's just really a lot to read, a lot of exciting things going on in all these magazines. The Vacation Station sounds like something I need right now. So tell us a little bit more about that one.
That magazine is mostly about travel and leisure, recreation, and we cover the United States in there as well as international. We have a lot of travel correspondents that report back to us on our shows and then also send us articles. I know we just did a whole feature on Lexington, Kentucky with that, and we have a lot of writers that call in and do their features. So it's a lot of fun because I think travel is one of the most important things where, you know, people get out of their regular day-to-day thing that they do and they experience something new, and also get a chance to just kind of, you know, relax too. I think relaxation is a good thing.
Oh, I think it is. I think you're very right. I noticed one of your articles was on Portland, Oregon, and, you know, we're very interested in Portland because that's the city of roses. So
yes.
We really do need to go there. What was it like when you were there? Were the roses in bloom?
You know, that was written by Marilyn Hill and Norm Hill. They're the tandem travelers. They've been with us for a long time. But actually, we just missed each other. We actually went up there last year in August, and we were on our way to the Far West Garden Show, actually, that garden show put out there in Portland, Oregon. And so we did get to Portland last year. And it was, you know, it's such a beautiful city. In fact, it's one of the most sustainable cities in the country. And I think that's great that, it really does go hand in hand with roses, and you will love it. You can take these little subway trains all over the place in the downtown district, and they really preserve their history. So it does go with roses for sure.
Well, it's definitely on my list of things to do in the near
good
future.
Food, too.
Oh, that's always a plus, too. Nancy, what's it like to work with your daughter on an ongoing basis in close quarters?
Well, let's see. We started in, what, 1997? And we're still working together. For a long time, we lived together. Now we're traveling together. And sometimes I look at her, and when I get really upset, I look and I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's me. We're both totally, we kind of look alike. I look a lot younger than her, and we have the same personality, but we're very different
You
people.
Do realize she introduces me as her grandmother.
I love that.
I think I can see why you guys can travel so closely together. You have a sense of humor, and yes. In all close relationships, you need a good sense of humor.
Yes, you do. That's the number one thing.
I think travel teaches you that. Have a sense of humor, because if you don't, you're going to be in big trouble.
That's true.
Very true. Well, we know that you two are a very adventurous pair, but how did the idea of the Spirit of America tour come to be?
Well, you know, we started doing our radio shows here on Blog Talk 6.5 years ago, and we started interviewing the National Parks Conservation Association, and we've been covering national parks and parks in general in our magazines for years. It's been a passion of ours, and when we started interviewing them, their number of interviews started to increase, and it was, you know, national, so different issues would happen. And we started to realize that our parks are in danger in regards to budget cuts. They also are in danger in regards to keeping up with the maintenance and things like that. There's also environmental issues that actually affect our parks. And one thing through them that we realized that whatever was happening to our parks, which are protected, means that it's affecting the communities as well. And we started going, okay, let's go to this park, let's go to that park. And then you realize what America has in regards to parks, what America has in regards to history and nature and places for people to go, get out of the city. There's also urban parks. We need more of those. But, you know, so we really just got to this point of, wait a minute, we need to get out of, you know, sitting behind our desk and doing our radio show and doing the magazines and really showcase what our parks have to offer, especially last year. We could see the budget cuts were coming again, and, you know, we just went, okay, you know, the centennial for our national parks is coming up. August 25th, 2016 is our centennial for our national parks, and so we thought, well, wouldn't it be cool to go to all 398 national parks? That was what it was at that time when we decided this last year, and we were going to start on August 25th, 2012, but it was April, and we were coming to San Diego from Tucson. And it happened to be National Parks Week, and we kind of jumped the gun and said, let's start now, and so we did. So after a few excursions out to national parks, like Cabrillo National Monument here in San Diego, we went to the Sequoia National Park, and out to Mount Rainier, of course, Saguaro National Park in Tucson. We thought, there's no way you can do back and forth and cover all 401 national parks that we now have, because they've added more, even though they're cutting the budget. Let's just go on the road. And, you know, we're used to that, and so that's what happened.
Great. Guys, we've got a caller who has a question.
Hey,
Elena. Hi, this is Elena Williams. How are you today?
Hey, we're doing great. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, well, this particular program is at a time that works out really well for me, so I just want to call in. Since I don't listen live at 7:30 in the morning, West Coast time on Saturday.
And we were hoping that would be as many people.
Yeah, and I just want to comment that I'm going to Portland tomorrow, actually, because I have to participate in a floor bundle workshop in Vancouver. And so that's only about 3 hours south from where I am, a drive. And when she started talking about Portland, that's why I thought, oh, I better call.
Oh,
yeah. Dad.
I hope you get to see some roses while you're there.
I hope to get some pictures, yes.
Yeah. You take wonderful pictures. Elena blogs, and she posts some beautiful pictures of her roses on her blog. And I always enjoy looking at those and following you on Twitter as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I think you both of you are just the best. Absolutely wonderful cyber friends.
Yes, that is a great relationship that we have. Elena, share the address for your new blog.
Oh, well, I started blogging originally as Transplanted Gardener, but my real passion is roses. And so after a couple of years of talking about the differences in the climates from when I moved, I thought, you know, I need to really start blogging as roses, and so I call myself Evergreen Rosarian. So if you just Google that, Evergreen Rosarian. State of Washington is known as the Evergreen State because things stay green all year.
Well, it's a lovely blog, and we're so glad that you send that out to us all the time.
That's awesome. Elena, we'd love to send you a Rose Chat Radio coffee mug. If you'll stay on the line, we'll get Greg to get your shipping information.
Oh, that would be marvelous. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for calling in tonight. It's great to talk to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Elena. That was great. One of our great friends. Girls, where are you now?
Where are we now? We are sitting at Blue Heron Farm Bed and Breakfast. It's an organic farm in Fallbrook, California, which is one of the top growing regions, even for flowers, but also avocados. And it is just amazing what they can grow out here. We're in like little grower paradise. To talk to you in Rose Chat from a place where we're surrounded by roses and flowers and plants, it's amazing.
Sounds beautiful. Sounds beautiful. Since you've been touring around to all the parks, we expect that you've seen lots of beautiful gardens. So do you have some garden stories for us?
Oh, sure. We started out in Tucson, a month and a half ago. We first went to Tumacacori National Historical Park, which is a mission. And it's where, Spanish explorer Juan Bautista de Anza actually came through, and him and Father Font went on this exploration going up to San Francisco to found San Francisco, actually. And when we were there, that was one of the most amazing things to me was we'd actually been to the mission before, but on the side part, there's an actual mission garden, and we were talking to the park ranger, Anita, and she was talking about how they really made this effort to get plants in there, and they actually created this whole other orchard, which I'll tell you about, but they have some of the plants there. They have Castilian roses. Are you familiar with the Castilian roses?
No, Chris, are you familiar with Castilian roses?
I'm not. I'm interested to hear all about them.
Yeah. So what that is, it's really the roses that came over from the Spanish. So they had their roses. So they planted them there at the mission. And, Chris, I was thinking of you at that point because when you were on the show with us on Garden Gossip, you were talking about the rosarian beads, for the rosary.
Oh, rosary.
Yeah,
oh.
And so I just keep thinking rosarian with, we're on Rose Chat Radio, so it's in my head here. But but you were talking about, roses were used for the rosary. And so I'm wondering if that was how it works for them, that they brought those roses from Spain because they brought other plants in, like the quince, things like that. So the orchards there were amazing. They actually now have gone and created this whole orchard area of what it was like when the mission was built. They brought in figs, the quince, some citrus,
pomegranates
and apples, but they really worked with the local farmers to get the eldest kind of plant that they could get in there, the oldest ones and the more heirloom plants that they could, they could actually preserve these plants inside a national park, and I never knew parks did that. So it was amazing.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I think, we think about our parks as, always maybe a monument or definitely the scenery, but that's what they really do preserve our history. But the garden part of it, we went from there. We went to the Gila Cliff Dwellings just out of Silver City, New Mexico, and learned how the ancient cultures were actually farming then. So there's a lot of garden and farm history in our parks.
Wow. And, I'm like probably like a lot of folks who travel around our national parks. I don't think of them as preserving, being preservationists for garden history so much as I do, like you said, the landmarks.
Right.
When I go to a national park, I want to see an obelisk statue and somebody holding a gun, cast in bronze.
And they're there. They have those, but they do actually preserve the garden legacy. I think also in some of the back east farms they have orchards too.
Well, and obviously they're preserving native plants.
Mm-hmm. Yes, native plants. They do that a lot too. A lot of times they have their gardens with that, Nancy. You're right.
Yeah.
I think that's very important that, a lot of folks don't realize that there are plants that are just native to certain areas of this country. Sometimes we introduce other plants that will wipe out those native varieties. And so it's important that we have places that we can preserve.
Absolutely. The native plants, in some respects, when you're doing this thing in your own garden and you bring in the exotics, that's one thing. But when things are let loose in the wilderness, in order for a non-native plant to succeed, it always takes out two or three other native plants.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, what we might call invasive weeds in some other part of the country is a prized plant. It's actually pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. And we're finding that more regional we are with our roses and the companion plants that we plant with them, the more successful we are.
Mm.
You know, when we do something that's indicative to another region and expect it to do what it does there in our culture or our climate, it doesn't do as well, and it takes more work for us to make it look beautiful. But if we stick to our regions or some of the things that are more native to us, you know, our success rate's going to go up, up, up.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and it's something, you know, when as we're traveling, of course, we're getting into the communities too. So we're doing our tour, but we're also, you know, looking at our other magazines like Garden Gossip. And, you know, I have to tell you, roses are everywhere in the Southwest. It was kind of, you know, when we were in Silver City, New Mexico, it was the battle between the hollyhocks and the roses that we saw in people's gardens. And they're dropping.
That's a battle I'd love to see.
Well, I think people are using them because they're hardy.
Well, and I think, too, because for the most part in the desert, you have a dry heat unless you're in a place where there's monsoons, so you might have a couple of months where it's humid. But, I mean, I know growing roses in 29 palms was easy. We didn't get aphids. We didn't get the blights or all the diseases that roses might get in a more humid climate. They actually pretty much love the desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm surprised. I was surprised to hear you say hollyhocks growing. I thought that was a truly southern plant.
Really?
Oh, they love the desert, too.
See, now New Mexico has a lot of hollyhocks. You look at a lot of travel guides and think, do I see a hollyhock in an adobe building and a turquoise something, you know, some kind of painting with turquoise in it, but... I didn't know that you had them in the South like that. Cause
wow.
I was getting, you know, when we were crossing out of, you know, Silver City, New Mexico, and Arizona, I was getting, oh, I'm like, wham, I'm going to miss the hollyhocks. But a lot of people grow them in southern Arizona, too. But it is really, it's just fascinating when you're traveling to, you know, we always drive through people's neighborhoods. That is part of the garden gossip for us. We want to see what they're growing and what they're doing. And I think that there is a revolution going on where people are starting to not only grow flowers, but I see a mix of vegetable gardens going in, orchards and flowers, you know, where people are starting to really do things more at home. I don't know if you're noticing that in your neighborhoods where you all are from.
Yeah.
Where I'm from, we're seeing garden to table as a huge movement. Everyone, regardless of age, you know, no matter how much space they have, containers or whatever, they're very excited to plant the food that they're eating. So it's really exciting.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I wanted to share a quick story with you about hollyhocks in the South. You know, I love stories about folklore, about flowers. And, you know, we talked about rose folklore when I was on Garden Gossip with you guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here in the Deep South, back in the antebellum days and in the later times, people would plant hollyhocks around their outhouses. So when the prim and proper ladies would come for tea and they had to go out to the outhouse, they would say, I think I'm going to go out and look at your hollyhocks.
I like that. You know, that's funny. When, you know, in South Africa, they used to call those outhouses, you paint them pink, and they would call it the pink kamer, which is the pink house.
Room.
In Dutch, in the Afrikaans, that it was the pink room, and it was always floral.
and growing along it was cosmos,
mm-hmm.
which are dark pink, magenta, and white. You know cosmos, the flower?
I do. They're beautiful.
Yeah, so that's funny.
Yeah. Huh. Oh, interesting.
We have hollyhocks in the Midwest, too, but, you know, at least not in my region. We don't have the outhouses, but we still have hollyhocks.
I've seen some outhouses in the Old West.
Yeah, we saw outhouses. Yeah, there's outhouses in the West. Yeah, for sure.
Serving history. Outhouses are
part. Yeah. I can tell you that lights and electricity has reached my neighborhood here in the Deep South, but there are still some outhouses in Alabama.
Well, you know, Chris, when we get to Alabama, you're going to have to show us. We'll go plant some hollyhocks around the mall.
Okay, yeah. That'll be fun.
Well, guys, it's time for us to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back for more adventures with this dynamic duo. Chris will be talking with Lisa about their visit.
Hi, this is Jackie D'Elia with Southern Post Journal, and today I want to talk to you about manure compost tea. This is Authentic Haven brand from California. One of the things that I really like about this is how easy it is to apply. It's a simple cotton bag filled with composted manure. You drop it in your bucket, typically a 1 to 5 gallon bucket of water. Drop in your tea bag. You'll notice some of the brown liquids coming out, and that's the manure starting to mix with the water. Once that's finished, 1 to 3 days, you'll have some fantastic manure tea ready for putting on your plants. So I've got my manure tea brewing for about 3 days, and I'm going to take a peek in there and see what it looks like. It's got a great color, it's got a great smell, and it's ready to be applied to my garden. So whether you choose to put it in your watering can and a sprayer, or just take a bucket and drench it into your vegetable garden, it's very easy to use. I use it in my garden, and I highly recommend it. So give it a try.
Now you can find Haven brand soil conditioners online, wholesale and retail, at manuretea.com. Now, ladies, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about your trip to Tombstone, Arizona, but first I wanted to ask you about your Spirit of America Tour mascot, Priscilla.
Priscilla. Oh, she got blinged out yesterday.
Really?
She's our pink sock monkey. We went and we aired our show from Aggie Garcia. She's a fashion designer out here, and she met Priscilla a year ago when we started the tour, and we actually took her over again yesterday, and she got blinged, you know, all her clothes. She cleaned her up, number one, because she's getting dirty, you know.
Priscilla doesn't always behave.
No, she does not. And I don't. Chris, have you seen the photos on Facebook with her?
I've seen a few, and I think our publicity photo is of you three together.
You know.
She doesn't behave. It could be the company she's keeping.
Well, she kind of does all kinds of things. And I think, you know, what I will tell you this, Chris. Men seem to play with her more than women. How's that? You know, she did actually have a run-in with a sheriff in Wilcox, Arizona.
Cool.
He took her aside. Now we're getting video footage. No, people are now not just having their photo taken with her. Now they're actually giving her video lessons. And he took her aside and told her, now, listen, you know, don't let them keep you in the car in the heat out here. You know, you might get dehydrated and you could die kind of thing.
So,
and make sure you get out of the car. Don't let them forget you.
And so now?
Now she ends up in saloons.
Yeah, before we didn't let her go in saloons.
Now she's in saloons. She had to go to Big Nose Kate's Saloon in Tombstone, and she met all kinds of vigilantes, and even she got hanged.
Yeah, she did.
In a coffin.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well,
it
sounds like
she
has more fun than the rest of us.
Actually, she really does have a following, and she's having way too much fun.
Too many boyfriends.
It's like bringing up Lisa again.
No, I'm well-behaved compared to Priscilla. Seriously. I'm well-behaved.
Not
well-behaved. I am.
Well,
I'm very good. It's my mother you have to watch out for.
Yeah. I have to ask if Priscilla went with you to Tombstone.
Oh, she did.
Yes, that's where she got in trouble. She went from Wilcox into the Big Nose Cates in Tombstone. She went and she saw the world's largest tree. She's been to every single place we go. She goes with us, and she even has her own gang. She has Flying Fabio, who's also a sock monkey, but he's like a little miniature sock monkey, and he flies. And then we try to shoot him out of a cannon at Fort Bowie National Historic Site, but then we thought that might be cruelty to sock monkeys. And then
yeah, I'm sure there's a group about that.
We have Disco so Dottie.
Yeah, she used to be Patsy because we didn't know what to do with her.
She's a Christmas ornament.
Yes, she's a sock monkey, but her stomach is a Christmas ornament. So Aggie, the fashion designer, fixed it, and now she looks like a disco ball.
So she's Disco Dottie. We also have Pinot Pony, who's a little rocking horse made out of corks, wine corks. And so Pinot Pony goes wine tasting. And we have Mr. Pete, who is a sock monkey sock that goes over wine bottles. So they,
oh,
you know.
My goodness.
So she has a gang.
So you're really traveling with an entourage.
Yes.
Yes, that's our entourage. And but you know they're not. They have their own little case, and then we're allowed our one suitcase each, and then the rest
and
is
so,
cameras and
this
computers.
Is what we know. If you drive through Wilcox, Arizona, too fast, and you get pulled over, you bring up Priscilla, and she talks her way out of Lisa getting a ticket.
Yes.
That's a good thing.
That's a very good thing. Well, I would love to hear more about your stop in Tombstone at the Rose Tree Museum and Gift Shop. And you got to see the world's largest rose bush.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It, you know what? And the lady we met, Dorothy DeVere, is absolutely one of the most special people in the world. She knows the history of Tombstone like you wouldn't believe. We actually... You know, I know we did an interview clip with you for her, but before that, we met with her, and it feels like, you know, she actually, it's a house that used to be the Tombstone Inn, the Rose Tree Inn, but it's her husband's family that actually were there, and, you know, she sat us down in the kitchen area, just outside the kitchen, the dining room area, and she just kind of, she's just like someone you've met for and known for years, right, Nancy?
Yeah, she just started talking about their family. It was amazingly fascinating, and what a lovely woman.
Mm,
and the whole history of why that rose tree is there, why it's still doing so well. People, if you like roses, you got to go see it.
Oh, wow. Well, I'll tell you, I can't wait to share this clip with our listeners. And we've got that interview that you guys did with Dorothy. And let's go ahead and give a listen now.
All right.
This is Nancy Reed and Lisa Smith from Big Blend Radio and Big Blend Magazines on our Big Blend Spirit of America tour of all 401 National Park units. And today we're reporting live from the Rose Tree Museum in Tombstone, Arizona, especially for Rose Chat Radio that airs live and archived on Blog Talk Radio, the world's leader in Internet talk radio. So Rose Chat Radio, boy, do we have a special report for you. We are standing under the world's largest rose tree, and I believe it is a Lady Banksia rose tree, and we're going to learn more because we have Dorothy DeVere, who's the owner of the museum here, as well as the rose tree. Dorothy, it's good to have you on with us.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Nancy, it is really nice and shady here, being in Tombstone in the summer.
Well, I have never seen a rose tree like this. Look at the branches of trunk. It's all interwoven. It's huge. And you said, Dorothy, how large is this rose tree?
It covers over 9,000 square feet. And it's supported by iron trellises and wooden poles. And the trunk is about 16 feet in circumference, round.
Wow. And we are, you've got a museum on the site as well, but it actually was a home, right?
Exactly. Yes, it was a home until 1964. From 1916, actually, it was a boarding house, but the family grew up here. And then eventually the boarders disappeared with the loss of the county seat. That was the big thing because of our proximity to the courthouse. The people would come for court hearings and so forth, and they would stay here. It was called the Cochise House in those days.
Now, I've got to tell listeners for Rose Chat Radio, we're not getting shot. This is not a drive-by shooting.
And it's not 4th of July.
We are in Tombstone, and they do have gunfights. Is that what? Those are the gunfights.
Those are the gunfights on the street,
oh, cool.
Yes. That's for sure.
We've got roses and pistols here. So this being a house, let's talk about how the rose tree actually got here.
Well, in 1885, a woman by the name of Amelia Adamson owned the Cochise House. And one of her boarders was a lady named Mary G., who had married the superintendent of the Old Guard Mine. He had been in London buying turbines for the mine, and they met, had a whirlwind romance, and he brought her here. And they were building a house, and while the house was being built, they lived here. And she and Amelia became good friends. And during this time, her family in Scotland sent her a trunk full of rose cuttings, other shrubberies and so forth, and she gave this particular one to Amelia, and they planted it right here in this section of ground in 1885. And obviously, it found a good home.
Now, it also ended up on the world's Guinness, or the world's list of largest trees on the Guinness Book of Records?
Yes, it's in the Guinness Book of Records as the largest rose bush in the world. And the way we got the name, the reason we changed the name from Cochise House to the rose tree is that Robert Ripley stayed here in 1938. And he was just so impressed with this rose bush. And he told my husband's grandmother that he just thought it was the biggest he'd ever seen. And so he wrote in his Believe It or Not column about the rose tree. And, of course, the grandparents thought, gee, we got an unusual rose bush here. And they changed the name of the boarding house to the Rose Tree Inn.
Wow. So we've got the Rose Tree Inn. Okay. And you've got the Ripley's Believe It or Not, the Guinness Book of Records. Now, I've got to ask, what about America's Rose Society? Have they recognized this rose?
Yes, we're in there in one of their books. We have a copy of it at in our little shop there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you about the upkeep of this huge tree. Does it take a lot?
It does now. Years ago, Tombstone did not have a sewer system. We all had septic tanks, and we had several septic systems here. And it's our belief that one of the reasons the tree did as well as it has done is that its roots were tapped in. In the 60s, everybody had to go on to the sewer system in town. But we still had two septic tanks in the far end of the yard. And the rose just kept going and going, and we never had to fertilize it. Never did anything to it except water it. All right, 3 years ago we had a horrible frost, which is unusual here. It went down to below zero. And it was very hard on the lady here, and after that we had to start feeding her, because she had no resource to go to. And so we fertilize now with a compound that's made up by our nursery in Tucson, and we put it on every single month.
What about watering? How often do you water?
In the summer, from May through September, we water twice a week. And we just flood it with the garden hoses, this whole area, the whole underneath here. And we turn the hose on all night long.
Twice a week.
Okay, and then what about, do you have to prune it?
Oh, absolutely. We start pruning in February, and it usually takes about 6 weeks to cut out all the dead wood. And we do this every year, and we get truckloads full. It's just amazing. From standing here, you don't realize how thick it is and how far it goes out. And so we do that every year.
So you prune from the belly up?
Yes, underneath. And we my husband helps this. We have a helper, and the two of them get under here, and they wear safety glasses. And they usually end up with a stiff neck.
I can imagine. Can you give us a when it blooms, which you say is usually spring, April,
yes,
for you, how many blossoms?
I would say millions, Nancy.
Wow.
Depending on the weather, again, we'll see the first blossoms come in March. And if we have a warm March, we'll have a lot of blossoms. But by mid-April, we have millions. When they start to fall, we use a snow shovel to shovel them up, because it's just like walking in snow under here.
Wow.
Amazing. You also have a festival and a parade, don't you?
Yes, we do. Every April, we have a Rose Festival. And we have a parade, which is a great parade. And we usually have about 40, 45 entries. And we also, all the people in town use roses. And the one criteria of the parade entries is that you have to have roses. And we have horses, we have children. One of my favorites is a little old man who's dressed as an undertaker. He's pushing a wheelbarrow filled with roses, and his sign says, "Pushing up roses and tombstone."
And that's it, everybody. That's the way to end an interview. Thank you, Rose Chat Radio, for airing this special edition from our Big Blend Spirit of America tour. We are here in Tombstone. We have visited Fort Bowie National Historic Site, the Chiricahua National Monument, and tomorrow we're going to Coronado National Memorial, which is, I believe, just an hour or so outside of Tombstone. So Tombstone has three national parks. And it has the world's largest rose tree and gunfights and saloons like Big Nose Kate's. So you got to come out and come and visit out here, everybody in Roseland. Thanks so much. And to keep up with the information on the parade, the Rose Festival Parade, you can go to the Tombstone Chamber of Commerce website.
Sounds great.
Wow, ladies, that just sounds like such a wonderful place. Were you all actually underneath interviewing at the Rose?
Yeah, that's something we're doing now. You know, this is a thing when you're traveling, you never know what's going to happen. So now we're doing a lot of radio interviews that way. We were actually standing under that tree. And it's actually interesting listening to the different interviews we've done out in the field. The acoustics of that tree, you could barely hear anything with the gunfights at all because the tree was like, it's huge, and it's like this huge blanket over you.
It is like a blanket, and it's a cool, you know, we're in Tombstone in the middle of summer, and that was the coolest place to stay.
Yeah. We're like, thank goodness, you know. But you actually have a ladder that you go under the rose tree, and it was featured in National Geographic, too. There's so many, you know, things on this, but we went, you know, you can actually go to the end of the garden and get up on this little stand and photograph from the top as well because it's just so big. It's just an amazing place. People need to go.
It's probably four or five feet deep.
I loved how she referred to the roses, the lady, and the and just cadence in her voice. It was so obvious that she loves the rose and she loves the story behind it.
And the town is rallied around, you know, on this rose, and it really brought a spirit to Tombstone. You know, I actually have an article. It's actually featured. She wrote a pamphlet about the Lady of the Rose, the story of Ethel Robertson Macia, and this is what she wrote. And, you know, in 1936, there's an article that was done in the Tombstone Epitaph, which is still running to this day, this newspaper. And it talks on April 16th about the rose tree is a mecca of tourism for this Easter Sunday. Everybody went to see the rose. They had over 400 visitors. Now, back in 1936, that's a big deal. And
that's a huge deal.
It's huge. And there was actually, I've got to go here, there's actually the last group arrived at 10:20 p.m. with flashlights. The last party from Nogales, Arizona, that's now right on the border. It's probably an hour and a half, 2 hour drive from Tombstone. The last party from Nogales included Reverend and Mrs. L.A. Parker of the Episcopal Church of the city. And the thought of the Reverend Parker, who's well-known, waiting after the services of Easter Day to actually make the trek to the Rosebush was a very sentimental thing for the town. And so it's really interesting. There were so many people that ended up on that day, and it made the businessmen stand up and go, wait a minute. A rose has just changed business in Tombstone, and they ended up going over and thanking, you know, the lady for bringing business to the town when they thought they shouldn't be open, and wow, people came to town. And so I think this actually plays a huge role in tourism, probably before, you know, gunfights in the movies did.
Sure. And all I can say to that is behold the power of a rose.
It brings people together.
It really does, in more ways than you realize. When you have when one single rosebush can have an economic impact on an entire town, you know, that really says something.
But it's also a huge habitat for a lot of wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dorothy showed me where they had a resident civet cat for a while.
Yeah.
Because the width or the depth of the rose tree, it's like maybe 4 or 5 feet. It's kind of like a tennis court that's 4 or 5 deep, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so animals could burrow in and make little pathways into it and sit there and wait for birds. It's
mm-hmm.
it's really interesting what lives in the rose tree.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And,
it's crazy, actually.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder about how roses got to this country, because there was a story, you know, of the peace rose and how that came over. So this is another rose that came over that did make history, too.
Exactly. And, you know, I feel like they're everywhere. There are roses. You know, my whole philosophy is I think every rose has a story to tell, and
for sure.
One has a huge one. Has a huge one.
Yeah, it was.
You know, I just can't imagine standing under that rose when it's in full bloom. You know, we have some quite large lady banks of roses here in Birmingham, but nothing that rises to this size. And they are breathtaking in the early spring when they bloom.
It's like 16 people
mm-hmm.
to wrap around that trunk.
Not the trunk, but the whole circumference.
The circumference of it. And the trunk is really gnarly, like a wine tree. It's huge, but it's not. It's like when for us, you know, going to like the Sequoia National Park and looking at these huge trees and people holding hands around. That's what this is like when you go and look at the circumference of this whole thing. And the trunk is gnarly. It's very interesting to me because, like Wilcox, Arizona, 45 minutes to an hour away between Wilcox and Tombstone. This is where everybody's growing grapes. Of course, they have amazing wines that you would never imagine out in southeast Arizona, but they're growing most of the grapes for Arizona wines in this area. And I know, Chris, we were talking about that when you were on our show about grapes and roses. And
oh, sure. The function of the Sebastopol rose.
And it's interesting, looking at this trunk of the actual rose tree, of this world's largest rose tree, it's very much like a very old grapevine. The way it whirls, you know, it's gnarly.
If you look at the rest of the tree and you just looked at the trunk, I don't think you would go, oh, that's a rose.
No, not at all. It's like a tree. It truly is a tree.
It doesn't look like a rose. Mm-mm.
Yeah. And you know what? After hearing this interview with Ms. DeVere, I'll never complain about pruning my roses again.
Oh, no. I don't even see how they do it.
I have about 150,
What was interesting is there's mulch, you know, because of the way it strips, the bark strips from the top. And they actually have someone that comes in and actually takes some of the bark and uses it for some kind of craft item. I can't remember what it was. It's got its own mulch.
Wow. It's
mind-boggling. It really is.
Mm-hmm. She said that a group of Rosarians came over from England one day, and there was a group, and they were staying in Tucson, Arizona, which is over 70 miles from Tombstone. And it will take about an hour and a half to get to Tucson. And they came in, they drove in, and they all sat there from the time it opened, the museum. They were all sitting under the tree. And she comes in and she talks to them and like, what can I do for you? Would you like some water and everything? And they sat there all day long under the tree. They took a few clippings and she was fine with that. She's like, sure. They sat all day long. She's like, are you sure? Let me tell you about the hotels. Here's the restaurants in town. They weren't interested in any of that. They just wanted to sit under this rose tree. And so then, you know, they leave. They close up the museum at 5 o'clock. Lo and behold, the next morning, one of her employees calls her and says, Dorothy, you're not going to believe this. There's all these British people here, and they just want to sit under the tree. And she's like, oh, my gosh. They drove back to Tucson to spend the night and came back by 9 o'clock the next morning to sit under the tree for another full day before they flew back to England.
That's something else. I'll tell you.
I think that, you know, you actually can, I believe, you can purchase a cutting.
Yeah. I think she's doing something like that.
Yeah. I saw a sign there. It's like, you know, please take a cutting. I don't think this tree, as long as they water it, is ever going to die.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I don't think it will either. I think it will, it'll outlive us all. And, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about growing roses, especially the old garden varieties, is that you share clippings with people that come your way. And, you know, it just perpetuates the rose even further, sharing these roses with
So is that a hint for now from, we should have sent you guys clippings?
Oh, yeah, we could have
done. Yeah, I've been watching the mail since you've been.
Okay, well, you know what? We'll get you clippings as we travel.
Because we're going to go
because
back.
It's our first instinct. You know what? You know the rule of nip and tuck. It's not plastic surgery. It's called you walk by a garden and you just
nip and tuck and
put it in your purse or your pocket and you go home and grow it. Now we don't have a home. We're traveling for 4 years. Oh. So we'll just send them to you.
You can send them to us. Because we live by that philosophy around here, too.
Oh, you like the nip and tuck.
Oh, you know,
we do.
She would gladly.
Yeah, you know what?
We'll go back.
I'm going to give her a call. She's the sweetest lady. Just one of the most amazing people that we've met on the tour so far, really. You just want to sit all day
she's
and have
what,
tea with her. You
she's
know?
What I would call a gentlewoman.
Yeah, and strong. Yeah,
you can hear her voice.
She was a cattle rancher, too. Don't mess with her.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll bet her and Annie Haven of our sponsor from Haven Brand Soil Conditioners would get along fine. You know,
speaking of
Annie's an independent rancher.
Yeah, you know, Annie's not far from here, I don't believe. We're in Fallbrook, and I think she's nearby here. So I think we need to go see her while we're in Southern California. You know, we've been talking about that on Twitter. So, we're going to have to try and connect while we're in California here at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's chiming in. She must be listening in our chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. She says, yay for cattle women.
Yeah. Go, girl.
Yeah. Well, we're very quickly running out of time, but I did want to ask you, and I know we talked a lot about some of the things that have gone on your trips, but is there any crazy experiences that you've had since you began this Spirit of America tour that you could share tonight?
Well, you know, this
on
is,
the air?
On the air, yeah, really.
Yeah,
you really want to know?
Yeah, to a genteel audience.
You know, we're thinking of starting a new blog, actually, just even on the fact that, you know, I've got a thing when we started, it was very interesting that right as we actually packed up our home, we were staying with our friend Rondi, and we were about to, you know, go to Tumacacri the next day, and this was it, you know. You knew it was real, and you're pinching yourself, is this real? And we went out to a Mexican restaurant in Tucson, and I had a jalapeno margarita because I'd never had one. Everyone's looking at me like, are you crazy? And I thought, well, no, I've never had one, you know. And there's this thing, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt has this quote about doing something different every single day. And I think that's what this tour has done. And so I'm going to have to start this blog or I'm going to have to do something with this because we've managed to do it. But I think one of the craziest things I've done on this tour is climb through a cave at the Coronado National Memorial. I hiked down all these rocks right after a monsoon into this cave where you couldn't see, and you're walking in the dark. You've got little headlamps, and the climb in and the climb out was not easy. But that was my first time truly. I've been in caves, but actually climbing in and down and going in and walking on this sand. You know, it's like the silt on it, and it was like walking on the beach, and no one was there. Like, there was no footprints. It was absolutely one of the most surreal things I've ever been through in my life.
Wow.
I think one of the things about this tour is learning to clear your mind of everything you think you know.
Yeah.
And walk in the footsteps of somebody else that does something totally different than what you do to relate to them and come out going, wow, that's not what I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it shifts your opinions about a lot of things.
Yes.
It's called actually finding out the truth by being there physically and not just talking about something you heard on the news or you read on Wikipedia or mimicking somebody else's verbiage.
Yeah, we have a lot of beliefs. You know, we all have these
and being
things,
open
yeah.
to, you get to change your mind
mm-hmm.
about something.
Right.
That's
and, you know,
point.
I think that's important, that whole self. You know, it's a process of self-discovery probably more than anything. You figure out that the world's not exactly the way you thought it was.
Yeah,
exactly.
And the quicker you discover that, the better, you know. And there's mm-hmm. conversations you may not agree with somebody, they may not agree with you, but it's finding those relationships where you can have true discussions on things that really matter in the world, Mm-hmm. And it goes right down to what are we growing in our gardens. And that really does. What's in our food? And
what are we doing about water conservation?
Yeah, we're learning things firsthand and how really things are local. And you have to look at everything as a microclimate, just like in your garden.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So, ladies, you're at the Blue Heron Bed and Breakfast this evening. Where do you go from there?
Well, we go on Tuesday. No, Monday. What, Tuesday, Nancy and I are going to Bailey's.
Well, look at me. I don't even know what
Bailey's is. Bailey's Palomar Mountain Resort. It's one of the
From the 1800s.
From the 1800s.
Yeah.
Their entire generation. I mean, this is the 1800s, so this has been in the family since then. And they were one of the people who founded Palomar Mountain. It has an observatory, the state park, and a great family. So we're going to actually go stay in the old ranch house, and they have camping and all kinds. They have gardens, too. They do their own bees and everything. So.
And their relatives started the first post office there, which is now the site of the bed and breakfast.
Yeah, so we're going to go there and then to Julian, California, which is known for its apples and its
pears.
Orchards and wine and all kinds of great things.
Wow. Sounds like fun, ladies. It's been fun tonight. Thank you both so much for being on Rose Chat.
Well, thank you. We
my
really
pleasure.
Appreciate it, and we always appreciate being able to talk about our parks and our national parks and what's in them for people to discover, because they're true treasures. They are America's best idea, so thank you.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful, gals. You can keep in touch with Lisa and Nancy by following the Spirit of America Tour at BigBlendSpiritOfAmericanTour.com. And be sure to listen to them on Big Blend Radio right here on Blog Talk Radio Network. And we want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us tonight for Rose Chat. We'd love to hear your comments and your feedback on the show. Just send us an email at grow@rosechat.info. And you can find us on Twitter by following the Rose Chat hashtag. You can like Rose Chat Radio on Facebook, and be sure to check out our website, rosechatradio.com, for info on sponsorship opportunities and more about our guests in the past and the present. Both Chris and I are active members of the American Rose Society, and we believe that becoming a member is a decision you won't regret. You can find out all about that and much, much more by checking out their brand new website at ars.org.
The broadcast of Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the support of Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing an all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure teas and alfalfa teas, available wholesale and retail at manuretea.com.
Well, until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Lisa, Nancy, you guys get out in the garden and enjoy the evening.